96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. After a long, short holiday weekend, this is a good weekend. I don't know, there's just something about the sun this weekend. You know, it was just great. Like, when you have a loved one and they're there, but they don't ask you for no money or no food or, you know, to entertain them or for a ride anywhere. That's what the sun was like this weekend. A little bit of rain to cool things down, a little bit of heat to dry things up. This was a good weekend, and I'm holding on to it because we are entering the peak hurricane season, right? We're entering the peak of the season, and it is time to get prepared. Any little steps you can take around your house to begin securing small pieces of equipment or tools or things, right? It's time to start figuring out your plan. What are you, you know, what is the plan going to be? So when you get that 24-hour warning, you get that 48-hour warning, you get that 12-hour warning, you know what it is you're supposed to be doing, and you know how you're going to do it and achieve it. I really hoped that by now I would have heard some activity on the constituency level, the community level, where constituency offices and their executive teams are organizing talks, workshops, little sessions. Like, I mean, if you all remember, Dorian is one of the storms in the south. The Abaco community just pulled it together, and they had what you call the bucket. They had like a bucket brigade, where they gathered, where they, you know, got donations, and they created bucket care buckets for survivors, right? These are the things that should be happening at the constituency level, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later today. But I am just glad to be back. I'm going to say it again. I heard Mr. Strawn on Morning Blend mention it. Hopefully it has cleared up by now, but there was a traffic obstruction, an accident just west, I think, of Mackey Street near Ebenezer. I was caught up in that traffic this morning. I had to make a major detour. I needed to make a major detour onto Kemp Road to go south. So if you are still experiencing congestion in that area right now, do yourself a favor and detour. Trust me, just detour. Don't run yourself hot in that traffic line. Mind you, I had a good time in the traffic line this morning. A lot of time to think and observe. And I just want to say good morning to the 3 score and 10, gang. And the more dollars than cents, gang. I need to say good morning to y'all, first of all, because I don't never want to be in y'all bad books. Okay? You don't never want to be in the bad books of the 3 score and 10 gang and the more dollars than cents gang. I want to say good morning to that grandmother that turned right on red at Blue Hill Road onto Wolf Road with the disabled tag in the car. Now, I'm not making fun or deriding people with disabilities, because many people with disabilities can still drive. Mom should not be driving. That's all I'm going to say. Mom should not be driving. Whoever lent Mom that big of a truck this morning, I rebuke that. Listen, you're going to just figure out how to facilitate Mom's movements, okay? Because Mom really thought that turning right on red this morning at Blue Hill onto Wolf Road was the sensible thing to do, and it was not. And I'm just putting that out there. We can talk a little bit more about that in a second part of the show as well. I want to have a conversation later on about duty of care. What does it mean? and who holds it. But before we get there, I have two guests in studio this morning with me. Joining me today is Mr. Charles Hamilton from the Office of the Prime Minister and Dr. Ancelino Davis from BNT. Good morning, gentlemen.
All right. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Bahamas.
Now, Mr. Hamilton, I'm going to need you to speak directly into the mic. You're lucky that you're not a civil servant, because I was going to crack a joke about civil servants. But that's okay, because you're doing good work on behalf of the people. Remember the Queen's Army or not. Sometimes we forget what the civil service is. Good morning, Dr. Davis.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you.
Good morning, Bahamas. It's great to be here again.
Please introduce yourself, Dr. Davis, and then we'll let Mr. Hamilton introduce himself on the other side.
Good morning again, Bahamas. I am Dr. Ancelino Davis. I'm the senior scientist and policy analyst at the Bahamas National Trust. And I've been working in the environment field for about 20 years now, and it's definitely a good time to have this climate discussion.
Awesome. I've also been working in the bush for 20 years, but they will not let me call myself an environmentalist yet. Good morning, sir, Mr. Hamilton.
All right. Yes. Good morning. My name is Charles Hamilton. I am a climate change advisor in the Office of the Prime Minister, working to advance climate change issues here.
Absolutely, absolutely. When I think of climate change, I think of Mother Nature, sir. And so what you do is you ride with Mother Nature and you advise us humans on her mood. You tell us how she's doing today and how we should act accordingly, right?
Of course. We share this planet, and we sometimes, as you know, humans feel like we're at the top of this chain when we need to be working together, working in unity with everything that's here on our planet. So, we all have to work together like a family. If we don't treat one member of the family well, that could throw things out of whack.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And we need to begin to understand this, right? Like the things that we call pests are actually absolutely necessary for our local and regional and global ecosystems. Mm-hmm. So as much as, you know, I tell you all, the one thing I can wage a war against is mosquitoes. I say that on the radio, you know, I pick up my chest and say that. Mm-hmm. But at home, I understand the importance of mosquitoes, and sometimes I just let them bite me. So I've invited you to talk about the first regional conference on climate change. The Prime Minister announced this last week. It's taking place on August 16th and 17th of this year. And I can say I'm very excited to see, because this may be a teachable moment. Can the government pull this event off in 2 weeks?
The regional climate change conference is definitely something that the government and the people of the Bahamas should be looking forward to. Even though an announcement may have been made, 2 weeks before the conference, planning for it has been ongoing before that. It takes a lot, especially from a national security perspective, to pull together heads of government. And so we're excited for this and the potential, outcomes that it can have for us as a region.
Well, and I would say that from I saw Joe Biden walking Mia Motley across the stage at COP26, that I knew that something was in the works, like that there's something being planned, right? Because it's important for us to speak as a region. Especially when the optics look like one member state is being singled out. So I expected that something was in the works. And the Prime Minister has used a lot of his airtime to address climate change. If you're looking at politics, you could see that it is a serious issue for this administration, given the amount of time that they have invested in it, both talking about it and working on it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's because it is one of the singular existential threats for us as a country and for the lives and livelihoods of persons living within the Bahamas. And we don't have a lot of time to act. And so I certainly priority that it has been given. And I think, you know, it's going to be our job to see how persons can see the connectivity between an issue that seems like it's years ahead versus the issues we're suffering now here on the ground. They are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping this, if we can, you know, spend a little time seeing how we can bridge those two issues together.
Right. If I could throw out an example, is that, can we say that we're looking at our Conk situation now, right? If you're sitting in New Providence, you're looking at the Conk situation, you say, boy, these Conk getting smaller and smaller every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the cost is more and more for smaller Conk. And you say, okay, well, the fishermen just need bigger boats. They need to go out further distances where the bigger Conk are, right? But the truth is, this may be an indicator that in 20 years, in 25 years, that any fisherman in any size boat may have a tremendous difficulty finding mature conch or conch at all.
Yeah. I'd say this, you know.
Aaron, that's a situation now, actually, when we think related to how our grandparents and parents were finding conch. They were going and getting a boat full just off the shore. They could just walk out and crack out, you know, 50, 100 conch. Mm-hmm. But now fishermen have to drive all the way around Andres, you know, all over the place, spending, you know, hundreds of gallons of gas to find the conch that they need to make the living that's appropriate for their families. And as climate changes, those seagrass beds are going to shift. And maybe we'll have less seagrass beds, less mangroves and everything for conch and lobster and other fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, agreed. And to add to that, you know, what Dr. Davis said, as climate change happens and we see that the oceans begin to get more the acidification process, i.e. our water is becoming more acidic.
Yeah.
The conch shells in themselves may begin to dissolve because the water, the environment that it used to thrive in is becoming hostile for the conch shells to even be able to develop and grow. And you're seeing that in other regions of the world as well. So it's all connected. It's all connected.
All right. So here's a question that I wanted to sort of start with. How vulnerable is the Bahamas to climate change, and what are the priority concerns?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been a lot of work, a lot of publications that have shown that the Bahamas is seen among the top 10 most vulnerable countries in the world to climate change. There are a lot of ways and priorities for how climate change is going to impact the country. From food security, we just mentioned the issue with conch, but even in terms of increasing storms are going to bring salt water on. Our soil becomes more salty, so you can't grow certain foods in there, or it's becoming too hot, so you have to expend more energy getting water to those plants. From a health perspective, from whether it's our health infrastructure being damaged by storms, or you're seeing persons who may have, you know, been participating in jobs where you need to be out in the sun. It's becoming hot, man. You're looking at increased chance of, like, heat-related illnesses. You're looking at new diseases that are able to thrive because it's warmer for a longer period of time to water security. There are so many different components. Even in terms of our energy grid, because it's getting hotter, people are needing more AC or more fans or whatever is needed. And that, what does that mean for us, right, in terms of the cost of electricity? So it's a multi-pronged issue. And I know that some of the impacts people think are 50, 100 years from now, but no, we're seeing the effects. Right? And maybe persons can't connect it, but this is why I think it's such a priority for the administration right now.
All right.
I'd like to point out that it's not just these environmental concerns, but we have a lot of social concerns, like the immigration of our people. After Hurricane Dorian, we had a lot of professionals, educated people who never returned to Grand Bahama or Abaco. You have these economic situations where
you spend lots of money to invest in restoring the infrastructure or fixing the power generation, water distribution, and then you don't know if there's going to be another storm in the next 8 years, the next 10 years. And all the science is saying that these storms are going to be more frequent and, you know, more intense for us. So we have to really start thinking and planning. And we want to know, you know, when will the majority of our population become climate refugees? And because of the way our country is set up, a climate moves from Abaco to New Providence to find a better opportunity, not necessarily leaving the country.
Mm-hmm. You could be displaced within your own country.
Exactly.
So,
yes, we have internal refugees as well.
All right. So this week and last week on the Twitterverse, I've been seeing stories of a journalist who handcuffed himself to a state building in the jurisdiction that he was in. And it was like a scene out of a movie that we've seen recently. It could have been 2012. It even could have been 10,000 BC. Mm-hmm. But the point is, he was hot. He was livid. And he was moved to tears. And he's saying, listen, I've been crying about this situation, calling out for people to pay attention to it. We're in dire straits. This is an emergency, and we should be in panic mode in terms of the impact of climate change on the planet and irreversible changes in climate. How vulnerable are we to, how close are we to losing a significant amount of land land to rising sea levels, and which islands are most vulnerable to climate levels?
Boy, well, yes, I've certainly seen a lot more of these events where persons are handcuffing themselves and trying to raise the profile of the issue of climate change, and even seeing the movie, like, Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
It can feel daunting, even working in this space, as you go out and you negotiate and you try to advocate for your country, because it feels like at the end of the day, people don't see the inherent interest in human lives and livelihoods. Based on scenarios, I am sure that like persons may have seen graphics where we've shown what does projections for the Bahamas look like with a 1.1 degree, 1.5, 2 degree, or 3 degree Celsius increase in sea temperature. The world is on a pathway towards a 3 degree increase in average global temperatures.
Listen, just tell me, what could I do? Like, what do I, the average person, is that something that me and my neighbors could solve, or is that something that needs to be addressed at a corporate, global industrial level?
Yeah, so Aaron, getting back to your question just now about which islands are most vulnerable to climate change.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mix of who can be hit by these storms. Mm-hmm. You know, how much land can a flood cover? If we have another Hurricane Dorian, you know, an island like Andros is big enough to take a lot of that hit. But at the same time, most of our population actually lives in New Providence. Mm-hmm. So if we ever had a Hurricane Dorian class event on New Providence, our economy would be devastated. Mm-hmm. When you look at the politicians that are making the corporate players, the CEOs and stuff, most of them live on hills in multi-story buildings. But our population, the majority of us are living in, you know, single-story homes. So if you do have a flood, and you can look up all the flood maps and stuff like that, that's going to be a severe impact. And you also have things to think about, like the environment. So if you have a storm like that hit any of our other islands and wipes out the mangrove forests, the farming areas in Andros, takes out the bone fishing lodges and stuff, all the marinas and docks that are throughout the Abacos and Eleuthera, where you have so many people that are tied to fishing, these are always a major threat for us. And looking to this future of climate change and sea level rise is one thing, but that's on a global scale. And a lot of that we really can't do anything about, even as a country. But this initiative that the government is doing, where they're inviting regional partners to say, hey, let's come together as the Caribbean, where you have multiple member states who can then vote on things in the United Nations, who can make a regional group that can then push for change on the global scale. I think that's really where the power is on that level. But on the Bahamian level, on the individual level, like you're saying, I know you already do a lot of backyard farming, but we need to really get back to understanding how we impact the world around us and it impacts us, and trying to live just more healthy, more kind to the environment. And, you know, think about our kids. You can hear my kids in the back. But we want this world to be better for them, and we want them to be able to survive in it.
Yes. And I was going to say, right, that based on scenarios, the entire Bahamas is vulnerable to the impacts of climate. Yes, we have quote-unquote hills, right? And, you know, the rest of the Caribbean, they, like, laugh at us when we talk about us having hills, right?
Yeah.
There's little like, dots for us, right? But I think this is how come you see such a big push for it, because we realize, looking at the amount of our debt that has been cost due to climate disasters, that is significant. And this is how come we're trying to push so hard, because in order to be able to adapt, in order to develop the type of built environment, built solutions, it's going to require money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot come solely from the Bahamian purse. And so I agree with Dr. Davis. Like, there's a lot that we need to be pushing for at an international level. We're trying to do our best here at a local level to mm-hmm. raise awareness about climate change, to encourage persons who are building homes to consider, you know, do we need to be considering if you do build a house, can you go up an additional floor?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a sacrificial floor? And I hate to say it like that, right? But to be able to address the issues of, like, flooding, these are things that for, right? But now we need to take these things into consideration.
Or we forgot that we used to have to think about these, and we have not been following climate patterns because sometimes it's a cycle, right? There's some smaller cycles and then some larger cycles. And there's some climate behavior that we should have been observing that would have better prepared us for this moment right now. There's some historic cultural work that we could have been doing to discover, well, how did they survive? You go into communities on the family island like Stanyard Creek, and I mean the communities, particularly the communities that are on the water's edge, right?
Yes.
And you look at their building technique.
On stilts, right?
Right. You look at the way the infrastructure in the community and what they can do with their own resources, right? And you get a good sense of what we could be doing or exploring for a New Providence context. And so before I get to these texts, and we got to take a break, and there's a call on the line. Should we be, and this is me as an advocate, talking to you, Mr. Hamilton, as an advocate for the environment, and Dr. Davis as an putting a moratorium on the removal of hills and high land, should that be on the table at the national level? At the regional and at the sort of national and regional level, should we be exploring the potential, the possibility, and the outcomes of declaring particular spaces or the entire Bahamas as a sentient being in the way that it's been done in New Zealand, in able to protect it, to shift culture around it, and to attach us more severe or significant penalties to acts that destroy the environment or particular sites like Dean's Blue Hole in Long Island, which is not just a treasure for the people of Long Island primarily, for the Bahamas secondarily, but for the entire world, the global diving community. I think everybody would understand us wanting to employ measures to protect that site.
Okay. Can you go back to your first question?
So the question is, should we be seriously considering, or can I as an advocate put these on the table right now? A moratorium on cutting down hills, and at the local and regional level, the attempt to create a legal landscape where we can identify particular significant environmental landmarks and declare them as sentient beings, as has been done in New Zealand and other jurisdictions in the world.
Well, sorry. You wanted to go first, Dr. Davis?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that for the conservation and protection of the physical landscape of the Bahamas, we actually have an act. It's been changing over the years, but it does protect against, you know, just cutting down things willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. But the government always has to make balances, right? If you have a road that goes over a hill, that actually makes a road longer. So it makes the road longer so that paving and everything and all the maintenance over the future would take longer. Mm-hmm. And the next thing is... we do have protections for native plants and animals and different elements, especially culturally important species like the silver-top palm, for example, in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Mammals, you have protections for mangroves. The problem is a lot of Bahamians are not familiar with these laws. And so you go to a family island, and they would cut down the mangroves because they want to see the ocean, but they don't understand, or they want to get their boat out to go fish. Mm-hmm. But they don't understand that they need those mangroves so that the fish can actually grow up.
Yeah.
Right? And so we do need a lot more education, and we need to educate people about the laws that do exist so that they don't violate those laws and that they don't damage the environment that we actually rely on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would definitely agree with that. No hill or anything can be cut down without. And in fact, there are, if I recall, there is a certain component of New Providence that you cannot cut down because of the hills and whatnot.
Yeah.
But we do know that there are persons who go ahead and they try to cut down hills without mm-hmm. telling anything to mine for fill and whatnot. And, you know, that is us going about educating, telling people the importance of how, and if people see these type of issues going on, they need to report them to the appropriate authorities. And for your comment on New Zealand continues to be a pioneer in a lot of issues and is a very good advocate in the climate change space internationally, and has actually, you know, stopped the Bahamas on a lot of times in us in that space. I have to look up, this is an interesting bit in declaring a country a sentient being.
I know we've talked about applying an environmental tax mm-hmm. just for entering the country, mm-hmm. right? Declare the entire country a national park mm-hmm. or whatever the declaration needs to be made to be able to apply a tax to it, right? And then use that funding directly, not into the consolidated fund, but directly into a fund specifically earmarked for environmental concerns and climate change mitigation mm-hmm. and climate resiliency efforts. Okay. Right?
Yeah, Aaron, we do have a Bahamas Protected Areas Fund. Mm-hmm. And so that does what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
And those funds are directly earmarked for use in protected areas. And some of those protected areas are under the purview of the Bahamas National Trust. Mm-hmm. But then you also have areas like the Queen's Commonwealth Canopy Forest, which is the Queen of England, helped to establish protected areas throughout the Commonwealth countries. And then you have your forestry reserves and your conservation forests that are under the New Forestry Act. We have to think about those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, gentlemen, I got to get into some of these texts. Texters, some of these texts I'm going to read in the second part of the show. Trust me, we're going to get to them. But I got a text here that says we need to start a conch breeding program. Yep, I mean, I've talked about conch farms plenty. I'm not sure why there's not more investment in it. Is it because we're a hurricane zone, and then that could then, for an investor, that may be an obstacle or a barrier to investment concerns about a hurricane wiping out a project like that? Plus, for me, if I invest my money in growing conch, and then the conch reach maturity at 7 years old and decide they're walking off across the ocean, and I can't do nothing about it?
The Bahamas National Trust actually started a conch farming project in Grand Bahama.
Yeah.
And so several fishermen or fishers, because there are men and women involved, they were trained in how to start these conch farms. And we traveled to Puerto Rico, and there's a documentary out
So I'll share that with you, and it'll be great if you're, if the Guardian group could put that on their Facebook page, maybe share that out so that more people can see that.
Absolutely. So when are we going to have a Caribbean Bahamas Climate Change Academy where people can plug in virtually and engage in classes, seminars, discussions? Young people, maybe a summer program or a school vacation program where young people can come in, added as credits at UB or in high school for like QC and CP program, and have some tertiary level opportunities available, because the Queen's Commonwealth Canopy, I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. If I had known my cousin had one of them, I'd have been on it long time. And nothing I like more than begging that cousin for things.
Most certainly that is a really, really, really good idea. There have been some initiatives that have been going on with the government really thinking about how can we improve climate change education and whatnot. One of the components that have happened with the recent regional conference of youth on climate change.
Yeah.
There's been capacity building classes that have been going on with young people who signed up to attend that conference. They've been meeting since April or May of this year, and they continue to meet up every Monday. I'm learning on different topics leading up into COP27. There's an online platform that's being done with our conference partner, YME Bahamas. How does this work in a pilot phase, and how can we look at building this out so that more persons can get engaged with this? Additionally, through a technology needs assessment project, one of the things that stakeholders had a highlight was the importance of us moving forward with a BSc or an MSc in our climate change and these particular issues as well. But we know that there's more to be done. It's been 8 months since this unit has been established, and we're trying to see how we can pull together as much ideas and resources and partners to make these things more sustainable.
All right. Producer, you let me know when we need to take a break, because I got 7,500 more questions. We'll sort of go back into the conference. Mm-hmm. I imagine the conference is preparation for COP27.
Correct.
Right? That's a big part of it. But will there be opportunities for CARICOM and regional member states to discuss issues, regional environmental issues that won't necessarily be on the COP27 agenda, and one or two of the regional issues that the Bahamas would be asked to support or is actively engaged in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is how come we wanted to have a Caribbean meeting, because we definitely appreciate and value CARICOM as an organization. But we know that there are other members of our region who are not members of CARICOM,
yeah.
And hence the reason for pulling all of those groups together. Of course, from what I understand, the Bahamas will be the CARICOM chair between now to, I think, next year. And so there's definitely opportunities that will happen within the CARICOM calendar to talk about issues that are outside of the climate change, but within the environmental space. For this particular conference, what we're trying to focus on in particular is, okay, as a group, we tend to get lumped in together with other groups to do negotiating. And although we get it for reasons of, okay, we're put in a group where we can have larger numbers and therefore can have a, larger population that we consider that we represent, we recognize that as a region, we're definitely the most vulnerable to climate change. And so we want regional heads to say, okay, we're going into COP27. We need to be on the same page. We know that we normally do meet sometimes before COP to think about messages, but there are events coming up, the UN General Assembly in September, these meetings of the G7, all of these group and meetings that happen leading up into COP. And we want to ensure that we're all on the same page, that we're putting forward the same messages, and we're showing this, that as a region, we're even more united in terms of what we want to address as concerns for our people. I would say that we are addressing a wide range of topics from how do we ensure that we can address our mitigation targets as a region through fast-tracking renewable energy, because mm-hmm. we know that energy security can be tied very closely with protecting the environment and our climate. So how can we get that done? How can we ensure that tourism becomes sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. And that we know that this is a great industry for us, but we also know that it has a carbon footprint as well. How can we reduce that? How do we move on improving and resilience for our people in the area of food security, water security, health, et cetera, and addressing this issue of loss and damage? How do we push for this loss and damage facility for us to ensure that when we experience irreversible loss and damage to our countries, that we can tap into something to be able to get much needed resources from us? How can we ensure that there are clear climate access finance windows available in various multilateral development?
Hold on, you have climate banks? Like, because I have a whole lot of sun. I get so much sun. Look here, I could build a new UB with the amount of capital I have from the sun.
I want to comment on the, when you started.
Good morning, Mr. 52. How are you? Sorry, but give me a moment. Give me a moment, 52. And I read this term, climate debt. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't owe nobody nothing. Who owes who what?
Yes, yes.
And so is climate debt the debt that we incur due to major climate events?
Correct, correct.
Okay.
And we, if you know, just from accounting from the hurricanes, we, if you know, said it's a debt that we have gained because we had to borrow for it's about 50% is associated with climate disasters that we experienced in the past 5 to 7 years. So that's a lot. And it's been recognized even at the UN Secretary General level when he came here in Dorian that this cycle of debt and disaster is not something that countries like the Bahamas should be fitting by itself. And going into COP27, there is something that we've been pushing as a country and as a region among island states, that a loss and damage finance facility must be established, because you cannot tell us that we have to meet our commitments around climate change, tell us to use our national budgets to address these issues, and in the blink of an eye, those things can be destroyed, and then ask us to borrow money in order to address those issues. So this is something that the Bahamas and other countries have been pushing for, and including how can we improve climate risk insurance, so that way we know that insurance is becoming a lot higher because of the repeated disasters and because of increasing climate. We're trying to work on all of these things.
Producer, go to the break, please, before I actually start talking about these things. I have to remember, gentlemen, that you, in the capacity in which you've joined this conversation, mm-hmm. and I sort of put my advocacy hat on the side for a second, because the way that I feel about it, sort of insurance field, right? And like climate debt. And I just want to know this. Like, I look at my mother and I just ask her, where am I supposed to get the money? 5-year-old me, of course. Mm-hmm. Where am I supposed to get the money from for these chips, mommy? You know I can't afford these chips, right? It's sort of like that. Mm-hmm. But it's good to know that we're talking about this at the regional level, mm-hmm. right? And that we're really preparing for that discourse.
Remember, we're not just talking about it at the regional level. We're also talking about it in country. And the Bahamas National Trust is actually mandated to advise the government on these climate issues. And there are professionals in Department of Environmental Planning and Protection, the Department of Forestry. We have lots of NGO partners that are working on climate finance, disaster relief, as well as the environmental sector. And this climate debt is not just about money. It's also about the mangroves that take 50 years to grow back. And if we get another storm between that time, we won't get that forest back. The forests that were cut down on Carmichael Road, they're not going to grow back for another 50, 60 years to get to where they were. And so we have this constant rolling debt that's snowballing and getting bigger and bigger.
I got you. We're going to continue that on the other side of this break. Hopefully, we're going to get to you as well. Caller, please stay tuned. You're on the clock with Erin Green, with Mr. Charles Hamilton, Dr. Ancelino Davis, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises its customers, residents, and the general public that the corporation will commence improvement work on Boyd Road between Nassau Street and Columbus Avenue, beginning on July 4, 2022, for a duration of 8 weeks. During this period, there may be some interruption in water supply, road closures, and detours around the work area. Motorists are asked to avoid the area between the hours of 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience which may be caused and appreciate your patience as they work to improve their level of service.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Parents, it's that sweet time of year again.
The kids are going back to school.
So pick up your copy of the Nassau Guardian's Back to School Supplement, because
it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Put your students in the latest styles at the lowest prices, because summer break is almost over and our Back to School Supplement is back to school supplies at discounted prices, store locations, hours, and contact details.
It's the happiest season of all.
Advertisers, call the Nassau Guardian today at 302-2300 or call your account executive to get in on the 2-for-1 insertion deal. If it's uniforms, shoes, books, backpacks, calculators, art supplies, laptops, tablets, or whatever is on your back-to-school supply list, your ad should be in the Nassau Guardian's back-to-school supplement.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy? Who this is? Tamika? You ain't even remember my name?
Wow, Dred.
Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning your trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding not under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96 Commerce.
Good morning. You're on the clock with Erin Green on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Joining me today are Mr. Charles Hamilton from the Office of the Prime Minister and Dr. Ancelino Davis from BNT. And we're talking about the first regional conference on climate change, the road to COP27 for actors and advocates, and priority climate change issues for the Bahamas. Mr. Hamilton, Dr. Davis, we got a call on the line from before the break. I'm going to go quickly to them. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, sir. Good morning to all.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I feel like your guest is very political when you talk about the forest cutting down in Carmichael Road. But there'll be developers coming here and they cut down forests. You know, from you go the Western Nassau and all these developments, these are forests cutting down. You know, we have projects in Long Island. They're about to cut down forests, cut down trees, and Exuma that's coming, and an avocado that's dead and still standing that needs to be cut down and harnessed. You know, when it's not the forest, it's the water, it's the well that was just man-made. You know, thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, we appreciate you airing your frustrations and concerns with things that should have been dealt with.
We got to talk about humans, you know, humans, you know, rather than be trying to preserve the animals, trying to preserve everything, but the humans. When are we going to preserve the humans?
No, but thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome. This is a part of that process. A human cannot stand alone, right? You destroy one more, we cause to go extinct one more animal and the ecosystem could collapse, right? This is a conversation about preserving or ensuring the best possible quality of life for humans, right? And we do that by being altruistic and understanding that we have to, particularly since we think we are the only sentient beings on the planet, particularly since we think we are the most civilization so far, we have an obligation to protect these things.
Agreed.
And I want to remind all the callers, all the listeners, that none of this protection that we're doing is just because we think the animals are cute or the plants are pretty. All of this comes back to us surviving as a people, as human beings, and as a culture. Right now in the Bahamas, imagine if you go to Mangrove Key, Andrus, and there weren't any mangroves. What if you go to Conk Sound and it wasn't no more conk, right? Boobies, rocks, all kinds of things named after these animals. And people traditionally named those places because that's where they knew they could go and find these things so that they could, you know, have some conk to eat so that they could, you know, find the mangroves. And you go into the mangroves and you fish for whichever types of fish you want to catch. You have like different places named after crabs throughout the Bahamas. And we want those things around because push come to shove, when there's a major storm, if there's an oil spill or something, those boats that would have come to the Bahamas, they're going to stop. And we saw that through Dorian. We saw that through COVID. We saw that through numerous hurricanes in the past. And we know that every once in a while, something's going to happen and there are no boats coming from the States. You don't have fresh milk. You don't have fresh protein. So we need to go back to the, you know, go back to the island, go back to the forest,
bush.
Go back to the bush.
Yep.
And that's why we're protecting these things. And it's not just because we like the environment and we think the water pretty. We know that if we don't protect these now, we won't have a home. And then what will happen to us?
Absolutely.
And I just have to say this, like, regardless of like people's, you know, beliefs, the first job, if you want to call that, or responsibility that, you know, people had was to be a steward for the planet, because all things are connected. And this climate change issue is connected to biodiversity, the animals and plants that are around us, and whether or not we are going to have a place to survive. So, no, plants are not more important than people, but people are also not more important than plants or animals.
Absolutely. Now, gentlemen, I got two callers on the line. We're almost out of time. The question I want you to answer for me is, how can the advocate activist participate in the first regional conference and COP 20? Seven, and will these events be aired to the public? But let's get to these callers. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. You got 60 seconds.
Good morning, Miss Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Sparky.
Yes, ma'am. Let me ask you a question. You want to build your home, so right? Your brand new home?
No, I don't want a brand new home.
Okay, somebody on that show want to build a nice brand new home, right? If we don't cut down nothing like that, where you will get the fill from to put in your foundation?
Not the hill. Because not the hill.
But where you will get it from?
I can find it. I can
buy
it.
Come on, man, let's be real.
I can import it.
Import it from where?
Yeah, from someplace else with hills.
Then you still cut down a hill.
Yeah, but you're cutting down a hill in a mountainous area, right?
So we can import curry from Japan.
We import curry from India. I don't understand why we can't import it from Japan.
But we got curry right here.
I mean, you got quarry, and it's being used. And we haven't done a study yet to show the impact of the removal of the quarry. But it gets better, Sparky. I thank you for calling. I cannot support that because I refuse to participate in this scheme where we pay the contractor to take the quarry out our yard, and then he gets to sell it to somebody else. The whole thing seems incorrect. And that's all I'm going to say, Sparky. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron Green, and good morning to your guest, Aaron Green. I know you're running out of time.
Yes, sir.
All I suggest that the conference in Egypt is TV and radio.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a very important conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we even need to watch that because, you know, we have the largest coral reef in the world. Are you aware from Andres?
Well, listen, is it the second or the third largest, or is it?
I think it's second, third, but even the echo environment itself depend on the Bahamas being protected, because if the Bahamas destroy, then the rest of the world destroy. You could read it up.
Absolutely.
The gentlemen, them know what I'm talking about. This is no fiction.
No, I agree with you. Thank you. Listen, thank you. It is imperative for everybody to know that the Bahamas, right, we are sort of the core, especially for marine culture right now, for vast part of this hemisphere and the globe, right? The same way Jordan Peele could have a movie in the theater based on Tony McKay, yeah? It's the same way you need to understand that your environment, both social, environmental, influence the world and impact the world tremendously. And you're right, Pumpkin Eater. That's right. That's why we need to have it televised across the nation using whatever platforms are available to us. Mr. Hamilton, Dr. Davis, I'd like to thank you for joining me. I am going to sit in and host Guardian Radio AM for Mr. Cecil Newry today. So if you are able to hold the line, Mr. Davis, or hold the chair, Mr. Hamilton, for a few more minutes, we'd have a little bit more time to close out the conversation after the break. Thank you to my texters and callers. And for those early texts, we're going to get to those texts in this second part of the show today. Thank you for tuning into On the Clock with Aaron Green, and stay tuned for Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry, being hosted by me today. Have a great day, Bahamas.